Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Do angels exist? If so, are they heaven sent or products of the human brain? After the publication of the bestseller The Third Man Factor, which examined the phenomenon of explorers who found themselves at the edge of death and experienced a benevolent presence that led them out of the impossible, John Geiger was inundated with firsthand accounts from people who had the same experience, a vivid presence that aided them as they faced crisis, ranging from physical and sexual assaults to automobile accidents, airplane crashes, serious illness, childbirth, and depression. His new book, The Angel Effect, examines this phenomenon, and Geiger argues that it has the potential to aid us, even to save us, and asks whether it is a trainable skill. And we welcome John Geiger to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Real pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
What got you down this path? You've done a lot of reporting, a lot on exploration, a lot on different parts of the world. What got you to this current point? And I ask this, assuming that it was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, it really has been a bit of a surprise. I was in the Arctic actually doing field research as part of a archaeological investigation of an expedition that had vanished in 1719. So I was, you know, in a kind of an extreme situation myself on an Arctic island, very remote, being attacked by mosquitoes and polar bears and the usual dramas associated with the Arctic. And while I was there, our team got, basically, I think we all got kind of hypothermic. I mean, we'd been there for weeks on end, and eventually we were soaked to the bone. And I think I was, you know, facing a pretty serious case of hypothermia, and I remember being in my tent alone and having a, you know, sort of shaking, you know, rhythmic shivering, and then having a sense of being separated from myself. Very odd experience. I never, you know, I mean, as a child, I'd had a funny episode like this, but nothing in my life had sort of prepared me for that moment of feeling like I was looking at myself, really, and taking pity on myself. And so when I came out of that situation, I start to look around to see if other, you know, people in exploration, you know, situations had, other explorers had actually had this experience, and I came across Ernest Shackleton's very well known episode in Antarctica, where he and two other men felt that they were aided by an unseen presence, a divine companion, as he called it. And as I started to look, you know, further and further, I found more and more cases. Charles Lindbergh, you know, in his famous solo Atlantic crossing. Joshua Slocum, the first man to solo circumnavigate the world. Climbers like Reinhold Messner and some of the great Frank Smyth, great climbers. And in fact, you know, the more I looked, the more examples I found. And astronauts, Jerry Lininger, the NASA astronaut. I mean, so many examples, and all of them people in these sorts of extreme situations, very earthy, healthy, vigorous, educated people, but all describing encounters with an unseen being that aided them and helped them survive.
So the question that you ultimately, with the first book, The Third Man Factor, and this book, is to answer the question of what's going on here. And you have come, and I'm just curious as to where you are on this. I mean, do you believe that meaning, are there still question marks for you, or do you have some definitive in your mind as to what we're talking about here?
Well, I think there are still question marks. I mean, there's a lot of research now underway. There are neurologists who are studying this phenomenon. There are psychologists who've looked at it and have developed theories as to what's happening. And of course, there's always been a spiritual foundation for our interpretation of these experiences. If you look at what happened to people like Reinhold Messner and Jerry Lininger and others, and you put it in a historic context, you know, these are very much experiences that in earlier times would have been just immediately explained as an angelic intervention. And indeed, in the angel effect, you know, many of the people that I spoke to, even very secular people, these are not necessarily people who are devout or kind of live in a world of expectation of encountering angels. These are just regular people going about their lives, who have these moments of great stress and experience what they describe as an angel. That's often the word that's applied to it. So, you know, the problem with the scientific investigations is that none of them has demonstrated, you know, what's going on. In a clinical setting, it has been shown that you can evoke a sense of a presence. You can actually, using electrical stimulus in the temporal parietal junction, you can bring on a sense of an unseen being with you. But it has none of the, you know, impact, the sense of benevolence, the sense of love that accompanies these other situations that I'm describing in the angel effect that don't happen in laboratories. You know, they're people who, as you mentioned, are, you know, in a terrible car accident and are clinging to their lives. They're people in light plane crashes or in steeped in terrible depression or in abusive situations. So there's any number of examples, and these are not people who are tethered to electrical stimulus devices. They're people just undergoing the terrible stresses that each one of us might may confront in our lives, and they all come out of this experience feeling that they have been touched by a tremendously powerful benevolent force. So, you know, I think there's obviously a lot of work that needs to be done on the brain side, because there does seem to be some hint that this is a brain response to extreme stress, but we don't have an explanation. I go through all the theories in the book, and there are a lot of theories, and none of them is satisfactory. None of them really explains what's happening. The only one that does explain what's happening, but you have to be a believer, you have to accept this, is that there is a spiritual dimension to it. But that's a very personal thing. I can't prove or disprove the existence of God or, you know, heaven. I wish I could. Be a hell of a story, but I can't do that with this book. What I can show is that these are real experiences. These are lived experiences. These are not, you know, wacky people, and these are not people who spend too much time gazing at crystals. These are serious people who are like you and I, who have these experiences, and they need to be taken seriously.
A couple of things that fascinate me about this. One is that it's not universal on either side, right? I mean, even the most devout, spiritual, believing person can have an extreme situation where they do not have this feeling.
Yeah.
Nor, scientifically, could you say that you're in an extreme situation and whatever is firing in the brain that would allow this feeling to come and have this presence be there, that's not universal either.
That's right, yeah. So there, I mean, and again, that's a problem, isn't it? That, you know, we know that this capacity exists. We know that people have this experience. We know that it's profoundly helpful. The question is, why doesn't it happen to everybody, and why some people and not others? And as you say, even the devout will not necessarily experience this when facing crises, and that leaves them feeling bereft somehow, that their faith wasn't there for them when they needed it most.
Right.
And so those are profound questions. I think that there are some possible explanations. One of them is the whole question of openness to experience, you know, the psychological variable. I think that some people are just more open to the possibility of this, you know, of an unusual experience, and accepting of those hints when they start to be received than others. I think some people would, in a crisis situation, you know, when they're starting to hear a voice or starting to feel a presence, when they know there can't possibly be someone else there, will just block that off, or will just discard it, or think, no, I'm losing my grip. I can't pay attention to this. I can't go there. And that's, in fact, the wrong response. That's not the right response, because, you know, what these cases show is that, you know, that by being open to these suggestions, being open to the help and comfort, it actually is a tremendously powerful resource that can be the key to survival for people in these situations. So that's one possible factor. I mean, obviously, on the spiritual side, there are other explanations. There's the most common explanation is it's just it wasn't their time. It was their time. They had finished. These people, these individuals, had finished their mission on Earth, and they were being called, and you know, there was no angel would stand in the way of their being summoned. I have trouble with that, you know, and as someone who's had my own, you know, very stressful moments, I like to think that an angel or God, if these entities exist, would intervene when called upon, but it doesn't always happen.
Because you can assume that and maybe I'm oversimplifying this, but it seems that no matter what's going on, you have a crisis, and that brings at some point a desperation that creates a need.
Yeah.
Or is there a possibility that it creates a desperation for a need of something, of help, and then a want, and then the evoking of whatever this is? Is that a fairly clear way of looking at it?
It absolutely. I mean, we are an extremely social species. This is, you know, we thrive in the company of other human beings, and when we're isolated from other people, whether isolated in our home because of a severe dependency issue, or whether trapped in a crack house being sexually attacked by a predator, or, you know, any of the other examples that I give in the book, when you're in those situations, you're feeling tremendously isolated. You're alone. You're away from the capacity for help. And so you reach out. You're in need. Some people find themselves praying for an intervention, help. Others are just, you know, wishing that there were something that would come to aid them. And what's striking is in many of the cases, and obviously the cases I document in the book, that help arrived. It arrived just as they would have wished it had arrived, and it gave them comfort. It spoke to them. It told them that they would survive this, that they would ultimately be fine. It gave them specific, in some cases, specific advice, tips, how to get out of this situation, what to do, how to react, and in some cases even there's a physical intervention felt. You know, there's a hand, a warm hand took my hand. You know, a number of the people I spoke to.
Right.
Described this kind of almost like a physical, or Ron DeFrancesco, who was in the World Trade Center, last man out of the South Tower before it collapsed. You know, Ron felt that he was actually lifted up and directed, he said it was an angel that saved his life. So, you know, there it manifests itself in very many ways, but it's very powerful, and whether it's a product of brain response to stress or whether it is an intervention from some other greater power, it is profoundly significant to these people, and it is, you know, they all credit it with being the difference between, you know, life and death.
The Angel Effect is the name of the new book. John Geiger is the author. It's published by Weinstein Books. John, thank you very much for being with us this morning and sharing. I appreciate you being here. Best of luck.
Thanks,
to
Joe.
You. Thank you so much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.